Since the 1800s, Hickok & Boardman Insurance Group has been providing quality service and peace of mind to our clients. With our offices in Burlington, Stowe, and St. Albans, and our Dennis Ricker & Brown offices in Montpelier and Lynnonville, we are here when you need us.
And now WDEV-FM and AM presents our two-hour public affairs program, Open Mic with Mike Smith. Important topics, topical guests, and your phone calls. And now here's the host of Open Mic, Mike Smith.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us this morning. A lot to get to today. We'll begin by a review of some of the things, the events, the news stories that we discussed earlier in the week. And a lot of them have updates, so it's prudent that we get to them and sort of in a review of the week, plus the updates, get a full picture of what we've been talking about this week. And, of course, the horrible news coming out of Nice, France. We'll touch on that as well. Then we'll speak with Montpelier Mayor John Holler. And, yes, we will bring up road conditions and parking because it seems to be a major concern in the capital city. And then our very own Lee Cattell will join us. You hear Lee almost constantly on this station, whether he's doing sports, whether he's doing the news, whether he's doing ads. But do you know who Lee Cattell is? We'll introduce you to Lee Cattell in a different way than you usually hear him, as part of a series we're doing here at the station to celebrate the 85th anniversary of WDEV. We want to go behind the scenes and make sure you know why WDEV is so successful, and it's because of the people here. So let's start out with your phone calls this morning. Horrible, horrible terrorist attack in Nice, France last night. A terrorist drove his truck through a crowd, killing 84, including a man and his 11-year-old son from Austin, Texas. One of the things that you always look for when this sort of thing happens is what's the reaction? And, of course, one of the first reactions that caught the news line was Newt Gingrich. And Newt Gingrich has said he thinks that we should test all Muslims in the United States, and if they believe in Sharia law, then deport them. He maintains that Sharia law is incompatible with Western civilization. So is Newt Gingrich right or wrong? Of course, we've been talking about this subject this week, and it was on the subject of Syrian refugees earlier in the week, and sort of the brouhaha that's happening in Rutland. There's an uproar over Syrian refugees. And one of the things that we discussed are some of the issues surrounding the Syrian refugees. For a lot of people, there are three major issues in Rutland that people are talking about with bringing in 100 Syrian refugees. One is safety, another is health, and lastly, the issue of cost. How much impact will this have on the school system, property taxes, those sort of things? And one of the things that I have cautioned people about, and it's mostly people who go after the opponents of this, because I think it's a total cop-out when you label people as racist, as bigots, when they have these concerns. And I say that from somebody that's, I support the Syrian refugee resettlement program, but approximately two-thirds of Americans do not share that opinion. And I suspect a majority of Vermonters don't share that opinion. And although I don't agree with their position, I can certainly understand their concerns, whether it's safety, whether it's health, whether it's cost. And I think one of the things that we have to recognize, there's got to be a better way to than just springing this on people. The fact is that this was sprung on the people of Rutland. And like any issue, what you're going to happen is you're going to have a backlash because they feel they weren't part of the process. And in this case, they weren't. And I understand this is a federal government decision. But there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a better way of understanding their concerns. And maybe there isn't a different outcome. But maybe people will be heard. Also this week, we spent a lot of time talking about race relations in the United States, including the differences between the 1960s and now. And one of the primary differences between the 1960s and now was that our challenges are much different. In the 1960s, we were talking about segregation, and segregation that was condoned by state laws. And we're still struggling with the lingering after effects of those racist policies from the 1960s. You don't have laws on the books that talk about segregation. You're not allowed to discriminate, to say there are only white-only bathrooms and black-only bathrooms, that blacks have to go to the back of the bus, that when they protest, they're water hosed down with dogs barking at them, German shepherds. We don't see that. But that doesn't mean racism doesn't exist. And we're still have those lingering after effects of those earlier times, those racist policies. But today's racism is much more personal and individualized. And like we've said, it makes it harder to see, easier to ignore, and more difficult, actually, to remedy than the segregation practices of the past. And one of the things that I found very compelling here was what Senator Tim Brown talked about. Senator Tim Brown is a Republican senator. He's an African-American Republican U.S. senator from the state of South Carolina. He's the first African-American U.S. senator from South Carolina, and he spoke on the House floor this week. And the reason I bring this up is because yesterday I talked about a New York Times poll where 69% of Americans think race relations are bad. But the opinions between black and white, especially when we look at police, are vastly different. And some interesting points from U.S. Senator Tim Scott. He said he felt, because he's been stopped by police as a U.S. senator on the Capitol grounds, he said he felt the humiliation that comes with feeling like you're being targeted for nothing more than being just yourself. During one of his 6 years on Capitol Hill, he was stopped by law enforcement 7 times. He's a U.S. senator. You know, he freely admits that he was speeding sometimes, sure, but the vast majority of the time he was pulled over was because he was driving his car in the wrong neighborhood. And he said, you know, I do not know how many African-American men who do not have a very similar story to tell, no matter their profession, no matter their income, no matter their disposition in life. And last year, he conveys a story. Last year, a policeman stopped him on his way into his congressional office. And he was wearing his Senate pin on his lapel of his suit, and that's sort of your identification pin. And the officer looked at me, the senator says, the officer looked at me with an attitude and said, "The pin I know, you I don't, show me your ID." The assumption was he was impersonating a member of Congress. One of the other heroes that we heard from during the Dallas was the chief of police in Dallas. Police Chief David Brown, 55. What an impressive African-American man he is. Very, very impressive. And one of the quotes that he said that really, it stuck with me. He said he invited protesters to become, he did this. He invited protesters to become part of the solution. We're hiring, he said, to get off the protest line and put an application in. We'll put you in your neighborhood and we'll help you resolve some of the problems you're protecting about. Basically, what he was saying is, look, we want you to be part of the solution. And I think that's wise advice. And one of the things that the press, Peggy Noonan, in her column today in the Wall Street Journal, it's really interesting, her take with the press. She says, you know, the best question from journalists for the man or woman running for president is this. In the area of race relations, why can't we get it right? All life, Mr. Trump, all your life, Mrs. Clinton, have been trying to solve what divides America. Why can't we? And then she says the reporter needs to give them time to breathe, space to the answer. Don't lean in after 18 seconds and interrupt them and try to prod them. Let them ponder that. In that time, they're going to be forced to think about it. If they change the subject, that will say enormous things about what they believe in the subject. If they don't have to share any thoughts, that will tell an enormous amount, too. You know, nobody wants to talk about that, is Peggy Noonan's point here. They want to talk, and for you to listen. But they don't really. And that's one of the things that we brought up earlier this week when we were talking about this issue. I mean, the two presumptive candidates for president, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, have shown little desire to really engage in this dialogue. Oh, they love to point fingers, take sides, avoid the real issues that needs to be addressed. But in the end, their rhetoric only polarizes our nation. And what we need is less polarization, and uniting America requires leaders to bridge these gaps instead of exploiting them, and be a thoughtful leader and a thoughtful voice of reason. Those are some of the things that we talked about in the last week. One of the things I want to talk about too, did Bernie sell out? But I want to take a phone call here. Let's go to Rich in Huntington. Rich, you're on Open Mic.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
I wonder if I could bring up again this concept of cultural incompatibility.
Sure. Go right ahead.
And just to make sure that this is not a matter of cultural supremacy here, I don't want to have the attitude that one culture is better than the other, because that would be not in the spirit of multiculturalism. But let's take the example here of what we refer to as Western European Judeo-Christian constitutional-based democratic culture versus, let's say, as an example, the culture of Islamic fundamentalism. I don't want to say that our culture is better than theirs, but let's just say I assume most liberal progressive Vermonters would prefer to live in a society where, for instance, women are not treated as second-class citizens by law, where gay people are not treated as criminals, often subject to the death penalty.
Thrown off roofs, actually.
And young girls do not have to live in fear of having barbaric surgical procedures done on their private parts. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, I don't want to be known as a cultural elitist, but that's just my personal preference.
Hey, thanks, Rich. Some good points there. Let's go to Fred in Newberry. Fred, you're on Open Mic.
My question is, if the federal government subsidizes the deviant behavior, does that promote deviant behavior?
And what are we talking about, Fred? I'm not sure.
Okay, so, all right, this is 40 years ago, I was hiking the Pacific Crest Trail with some friends, and we ran into a lot of people along the trail, and a lot of people that weren't hiking on the trail, we were getting food drops. And we met this woman. She was a young woman, very attractive. She had four children, and she said she had never been married before. And she said she only knew or could remember the name of one of her of one of the children's fathers. And then she said to me, she said, whenever I want a pay raise, I have another child.
Fred, certainly I understand what you're talking about now. And one of the things that we brought up during this whole discussion that we were having on race relations is sort of the breakdown of the American family. And does this have an impact on what is happening in our culture? And that is something I think is fascinating to explore. And one of the callers who brought it up, I said I would explore it at some other point. We need to explore that. I think it's important to explore that. And the breakdown of the American family and what that does for education, how does that impact crime, and how does it impact what you're talking about, Fred? And we'll certainly bring that up at some point along the way. One of the other things that we discussed during the week was the political events that happened during the week. And one of them was Bernie Sanders. Did he sell out? And we had talked about that. And a letter to the editor today in the Times Argus, in the Montpelier Barry Times Argus, caught my attention because it sort of went along this theme. And I just want to spend a moment with that, and also with what Bernie said in a USA Today exclusive that ran in today's paper. This is a letter to the editor by Jay Moore of Marshfield, and basically says this: some revolution, just as an article in the Black Agenda Report last year back at the beginning of Bernie's presidential campaign predicted he would do. Once he had fulfilled his role of shepherding disinfected voters into the deadly embrace of the Democratic Party, Bernie came out and endorsed the presidential candidacy of that ethically challenged, warmongering tool of Wall Street, Hillary Clinton. Lots of idealists, young people, and others felt the burn and were taken in by the electoral delusion. They had high hopes that Sanders, as an avowed democratic socialist, would somehow be different than other corrupt and opportunist politicians. Now that Bernie has sold out and left his supporters high and dry without consulting them on what it should have been done, they have every right to feel very angry. Sadly speaking, as a historian who has personally endured many election cycles, it does not seem that we can ever learn from the past. Each generation that comes along seemingly has to learn from its own experiences, as I did back in the 60s with the likes of Eugene McCarthy and George McGovern, that there is really no way to transform this system by working from within. Those outsiders who try are invariably co-opted, just as Bernie has been since he moved to Washington. The only way to have a real revolution is to break up the system altogether. As a protest vote, I will be casting my ballot in November for the Green Party candidate, Dr. Jill Stein, whose positions opposing militarism and imperialism are almost more progressive than Bernie's. I thought that was interesting because there is some dissatisfaction out there. Now, many of you callers said he had no choice, that he had to endorse Hillary Clinton, that Hillary Clinton was better than Trump. But how do you reconcile that with everything that Bernie has said, with everything that Bernie has accused sort of Hillary Clinton of being, the status quo, of being the protector of the elite, of maintaining this economic and political elitism that's at the exclusion of others and angers voters out there? Be very interested. We had quite a few phone calls on that issue, and it is something that, you know, we'll explore in the future as this campaign keeps going. I also saw in USA Today this morning this exclusive from USA Today that talks about what Bernie Sanders' future is going to be like. And the Sanders Institute is going to help awareness of the enormous crisis facing Americans. And the senator plans to launch educational and political organizations within the next few weeks to keep his progressive movement alive. He plans to support candidates that are out there, both from school boards to Congress. He plans to campaign for Debbie Wasserman Schultz's opponent, who chairs the Democratic National Committee and, as all of you know, is not a fan of Bernie, and Bernie's not a fan of hers. He also will be supporting Hillary Clinton and going around the country. And I think today they're someplace together as well. So his goal, he says, is the campaign's coming to an end. But to my mind, what is absolutely imperative is that we keep the movement alive. And the question is, how do you keep that movement alive when you have people like Jay Moore thinking that you sold out, that Hillary Clinton is everything that you were against? Interesting, interesting things going on in the world of politics, on both sides, by the way. And the Republican National Convention will be starting Monday, I think it is. And just to give you a program note, we're going to have that young delegate from Vermont, that 17-year-old. He'll be calling in on Tuesday to our program, and we'll talk to him about what he's seeing, what he's learning at the Republican National Convention. One of the things that – another subject that we brought up yesterday, and I know, Tom, you're signaling to me that I got to get going here, and I'll keep going here, but we'll break in just a moment. One of the things that I want to provide an update with is that Justice Ginsburg expresses regret and vows that she'll be more circumspect with her views as they pertain to presidential politics. As we talked about on this program, she was very, very critical of Donald Trump twice with the New York Times and with CNN. It wasn't sort of a happenstance. It wasn't an open microphone that she got caught on. She was very out and very deliberate in her criticism of Donald Trump, and there was enormous blowback from that. There was blowback from the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, saying, look, you're just making the Supreme Court political. And once you do that, that's going to be a major problem. And she now, as of yesterday, says that she regrets her remarks and promises to stay out of presidential politics in the future. So that's a roam through what we've been talking about this week. And I know a lot of you said I spent a lot of time on the issue of race relations. But it's important. And the reason it's important is because we can't be talking just to ourselves. And we have the electronic ability to do that. We don't have to, in this information world, where there is so much information, we have the ability to sort of get into a bubble and only listen to what we want to listen. We can delete. We can block. We can go to only sites that agree with us. And what that does, it moves people into vastly different corners. It makes them more extreme. And the reason I spent a lot of time talking about race relations this week is because I don't want that to happen. I want people to talk about it. I want people to exchange ideas. And we may not agree with those ideas, but talking about it at least makes people understand different views, different perspectives. And certainly in this country, there are different views and different perspectives, especially if you're black or white, dealing with race, dealing with police, dealing with establishment. When we come back, John Holler, the mayor of Montpelier, will be talking about, right out of the bat, talking about roads and roads conditions. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. It's my pleasure to welcome at our WDEV studios here John Toller, who is the mayor of Montpelier. I'm looking at this, John, and I apologize because I have a typo here, and I almost called you Halter.
You and I have known each other for quite a while, Mike. So you know better.
I know that. So let's begin. Let me ask this. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 802-244-1777 about anything about the capital city. John's here graciously spending the next half hour with us, or toll free at 877-291-8255. John, let's start out by talking about what seems to be the number one issue, or at least what I'm reading about what seems to be the number one issue in Montpelier, and that's road conditions. What's the problem?
Yeah. Well, it's certainly a problem. It's one that we recognize. It's been an issue in Montpelier for a while, and the problem is we just didn't spend enough on our roads for a long period of time. For about 10 years before I was mayor, the average we were spending on infrastructure generally, roads, sidewalks, bridges, was about $400,000 a year. We're now spending about $1 million a year. We need to be spending about $1.4 million. So we were underspending every year about $1 million on what we needed to be doing to make our roads in a serviceable condition. So we're going to get there. We have a plan. We're spending every year. We're spending about $150,000, $200,000 more. We're going to be doing that this year, next year. I think people are going to see a significant change soon. The other thing people are going to notice is the paving of our two main arteries, State Street and Main Street, which are state responsibility, and those will be paved next summer. So we're going to see some pretty significant changes. I ask people to hang in there, but I recognize it's a significant problem.
So your next number one problem will be traffic and holding traffic up because you're paving so much.
That's always a challenge, balancing those and when you do major projects.
So is money the remedy here?
It's just
more money?
It's just purely a function of money.
One of the things that people have talked about as well is sort of the difficulty of getting around Montpelier on bicycles. Is there a concentrated effort as you're doing this construction to create bicycle paths?
Making Montpelier more bicycle friendly is a high priority for our city council. We're making some progress, a little slower than I would like, but we are in the process. Two projects are going to make a difference. Well, start with two, and I think there are others. One is completing a segment of the bike path right in the middle of town. And that'll be part of our Taylor Street redevelopment project. We're in the final stages, I think, of finalizing easement acquisitions. So that project's going to go forward, I think, pretty soon. And that will connect the bike path right through the middle of town. So that's an important step. And then we're also extending the bike path from Granite Street, where the Hunger Mountain Co-op is located, and that will go all the way out to the eastern end of the city. So we'll have a bike path that will go all the way through town. So I think that'll be an improvement. We also have a master plan we've adopted. We've got a couple of other studies where we're looking at where we can put bike lanes. We've got bike markings on the road just to remind drivers that bikes have a right to share the roads in town. So I think we're making some headway there.
We're speaking with Montpelier Mayor John Haller. If you wish to join our conversation, the number is 802-244-1777. Or toll free at 877-291-8255. I think most people will be coming on 244-1777 instead of the toll free line, but you never know. News reports, and I always know that personnel issues, you got to be careful what you say and what you don't say, but news reports through emails that were FOIA'd suggest some concerns about the city manager before you extended his contract. Are those concerns been resolved?
I think those have been largely resolved. I mean, you had a city manager that's very experienced, has been there 21 years, and over time, clearly you're going to have people with differences of opinion about priorities and management styles, and I think we've been working hard to address those and put them behind us.
If I remember correctly, it was a one-year contract, wasn't it?
That's right. We've extended it for 1 year. So that contract will expire in February or March next
year. So that's coming up again.
It'll come up, so it'll be an issue that the council will have to be looking at.
You and other mayors have called for gun control measures. First of all, why? And then second of all, what are you asking for?
Well, let's start with the second one first. We've called for universal background checks. We have a system now where we have background checks for certain gun purchases, but not for others. We just frankly don't think that makes a lot of sense. If you're a convicted felon, you're going to be prohibited from buying a gun at a retail store. But if you want to range for a private sale off the internet and meet somebody in a parking lot, nobody's going to know the difference. And we just don't think that makes a lot of sense. So, you know, it's a very simple common sense measure. I think most people would agree. We need to keep guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them, convicted felons or people with severe mental illness. This is simply a measure to try and make sure that happens. And these universal background checks where they're adopted make sense. I mean, they work, and they keep guns out of the wrong hands. Why are we doing it? Vermont's not immune to it. We have a very high suicide rate. We know that that background checks do correlate with suicide. We have domestic violence. We have, you know, homicides occur and gun violence at a fairly frequent rate throughout our state. We are very safe in terms of actual criminal violence, but we're not immune from it, and we think we ought to just take a basic step to try and make our communities, our households safer.
Speaking with John Holler, who's the mayor of Montpelier, if you wish to join the conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. The Rutland mayor recently, well, it was in April, he announced that his city would welcome 100 Syrian refugees, and he has run into a buzzsaw. Would you welcome 100 Syrian refugees to Montpelier?
We'd certainly be open to that discussion. The difference, I think, between Rutland and Montpelier is they have ample housing available. We just don't have that situation in Montpelier. We have just the opposite. We have a very tight housing market. It's expensive. We don't have enough affordable housing. We're working on remedying that, but I'm not sure where we would house another 100 families. But I think that Montpelier might have a slightly different take on that than Rutland did, although I think part of the process, and I certainly don't want to criticize my fellow mayor. I have a lot of respect for Chris Loris. I think part of when you enter into something like that, having some process for bringing people along, having people engaged in a conversation is important, and we'd want to have that conversation in Montpelier with both the council and the community. But I suspect that people in Montpelier would be open to that. We certainly need more diversity. We're a very, you know, white community, like many in, or most communities in Vermont. But like I said, the housing would be a significant challenge for us.
I think one of the things that we learn with any issue, if you drop it all of a sudden on people, no matter where they are, there's going to be sort of wondering what's going on. I think if anything we learn out of this process, and whether it's windmills or anything else, that we have a process that we can at least have a conversation about this.
It's been one of the things I've learned most over and over in my job as mayor, and that is that bringing people in, having a process, giving people an opportunity to express their views is really critical. I learned from it. People feel like they're part of a decision-making process, and the ultimate outcome is usually better.
When we come back, I want to talk to about some of the major issues that are facing Vermont cities. We're speaking with Mayor John Holler, Mayor of Montpelier. If you wish to join our conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. When we come back, what are some of the problems facing Vermont cities? This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're speaking in studio here with John Holler, the mayor of Montpelier. John, thank you for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here, Mike.
What are some of the issues that our cities in Vermont are facing?
Yeah, I think they're facing the ones that Montpelier faces: property taxes, paving the roads, making our schools as good as possible and efficient, dealing with Act 46. I mean, those are the... And then making sure that we keep our young people, keeping our communities vibrant.
Let's follow up on a couple of those issues. First of all, property taxes. Obviously, that's been a contentious issue. Mostly the cost of education is sort of rolled up into that property tax debate. How do you address that?
Well, yeah, you may know, Mike, I chaired the school board in Montpelier for 8 years, was on the board for 9 years. I no longer, of course, do that as mayor, and we have a bifurcated system, so I don't have a lot of involvement in our school system. I am supportive of Act 46 and making our schools more efficient. I'd love to see our schools consolidate in our area. We have two high schools that are 3 miles apart, tiny schools. I think they could serve our students better and our property taxpayers better if we work together. That's a long process. I think there's work underway to study that, but you know, that, I think that's certainly an area that we ought to be looking at.
Stonecutter's Way. There's a railroad that goes right beside Stonecutter's Way in Montpelier. There is going to be spraying for weeds, weed control, and other things. You have a community garden right there in that area. Will that affect the community garden?
So this is an issue that's been around for a while. The railroad has not sprayed that for many years. They insist that they need to do that in order to make sure that the tracks are safe, that we don't have derailments that cause injury and property damage. The state has agreed with that, the Transportation Agency as well as the Agency of Agriculture. We have an organization called the Vermont Pesticide Advisory Council that looks at this issue to make sure that the spraying of herbicide is safe. They've concluded that it will not create harm to the community. There is a lot of objection to that. And last year we were successful in delaying the spraying. We went through with a manual weed whacking system. We paid for that and did it manually. The railroad and the state believe that's not effective long term to protect and preserve the tracks, because weeds grow down into the ballasts and rot the underlying structure of the railroad tracks. So the state has issued a permit that allows for spraying. We've had some conditions. It's going to be done early in the morning. They'll blockade the area so people don't walk through. And we've given notice to residents. But at the end of the day, it's the state's decision, and they've concluded that it's safe, doesn't create harm. But I understand there's a lot of objection to it and a lot of concern. It's been a difficult issue.
Yeah, if I'm hearing about it, then there must be some concern out there. One of the things that you touched on it when we were talking about issues of Vermont cities is downtown redevelopment, and Burlington is moving forward with downtown redevelopment. Rutland is talking about having a new hotel in its downtown. How do you make downtowns vibrant nowadays?
You know, it's one of the exciting things about being part of the Vermont Mayors Coalition, eight mayors. Virtually all of us have focused on making our downtowns more vibrant. So if you look at what's happening in St. Albans, Burlington, Rutland, Barrie, Montpelier, all of us are putting a great deal of effort into making our downtowns more vibrant. I respect greatly the work that Mayor Weinberger is doing. It's not going to be easy, but he's attracted a significant amount of capital to create new housing in his downtown, and that at its core is what makes downtowns work. Having both commercial and residential areas work together, having vibrant residential communities in our downtowns, and we're trying to do that as well in Montpelier, increasing housing, and I think we're going to see that happen over the next couple of years.
That was going to be my next question. Housing has got to be a component of all of this. How do you increase housing?
Well, we're doing it in Montpelier in a couple of ways. We're working with Downstreet Housing, which is a local nonprofit, to redevelop one of the historic blocks in our downtown area to put 18 new housing units. We're very supportive of that project. That's going ahead. They've got a significant amount of funding. We are partnering with Redstone Development to put housing as part of our new transit center, which will also be downtown. There'll be 40 new housing units, and encouraging other developers as well.
We seem to be a long way away, but we're not really a long way away from the next legislative session. All these things start to percolate right about now as we move forward to the new legislative session. For mayors, what are some of the legislative priorities?
We haven't met to talk about the upcoming session, but I suspect it's going to be a continued effort to promote our downtown development, whether that's through tax credits or other regulatory means, supporting transportation, so paving our roads, providing adequate support for that. We're probably not going to have a long list, but
an important list.
But we will, certainly.
One of the things, the last time you were here, and it generated a lot of phone calls, was parking. Any updates on parking in Montpelier? It seems to be at a premium, especially when the legislative session is in.
We have spent a lot of my time talking about and trying to work on our parking challenge. We have a new, I should have mentioned this before, a new economic development plan. We're going to be putting a significant amount of money into economic development in Montpelier, about $100,000 a year, plus another $50,000 for housing. Part of that plan recommends that we build a garage, and I think that is something that we need to focus on. We've been having conversations with the state, with a large downtown business, and others as well, to revive a plan that existed about 15 years ago to develop parking behind the Thrush, so it's called the Pit, area right downtown. we'll see what comes of that. We're having some preliminary analysis to see if that's feasible. But I think it's something that we need to address. It's it's a real problem for the state. It's very difficult for people to have access to the state house in the winter. I don't think that's a good situation. It's a limit on our ability to attract businesses downtown. So it's something we need to address. I spent a lot of my time on it. I think we've got some momentum to try and move forward on that problem.
You brought up the issue of sort of state and local issue. The ability to live together in a community where a large portion of your community is our state office building, state workers that come and go. How do you maintain that relationship? Can you give us some insight of how do you maintain that relationship? And secondly, what are some of the issues that are the yin and yang of that relationship?
Yeah. Well, you put your finger on when you talk about relationships. It's all about trust, communication, understanding. And so I've worked hard to maintain those relationships from, starting with Governor Shumlin, who's been very supportive of our efforts in Montpelier as well as other communities. Worked closely with his administration secretary, one of your successors, Justin Johnson, and Mike Obahowski runs the Building General Services and our partnership on the heating plant. It's all about being open, being transparent, and having a trust in those relationships. And by doing that, I think we've established that we can work well together and solve problems, and we've done that.
Let's go to Chris in Waterbury. Chris, you're on open mic with John Holler, the mayor of Montpelier.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Thanks for taking my call, and good morning to the mayor.
Good morning.
Your first conversation there when you started the program about roads, pretty timely. I was just speaking to one of our local representatives this morning. I'm a board member in the town of Waterbury, and you're not the only town that suffers with lack of revenue for infrastructure. I think it's probably a statewide issue, and what I asked the representative is if there was a way to sponsor a bill to do a temporary, maybe a five-year tax on gas from anywhere from 5 to 20 cents. I don't know how the numbers would work out, but with a sunset of 5 years, or if the gas prices increase to a certain point, then the tax would drop off, but try to generate revenue that would strictly go to the town's in Vermont to solve this infrastructure problem, because we clearly don't have the wherewithal to tackle our degrading road issues. And 2 years ago, I spoke at town meeting and suggested that in order for us to try to get a handle on our road systems, we'd have to double our municipal tax rate, and that's just not acceptable.
Thanks, Chris, for your phone call. Tax on gas?
It's an issue that the Mayor's Coalition has talked about. It's one that I would support. I think that it makes sense. We are, I think, going to get there without raising other taxes in Montpelier. We've passed a local option tax, so we have increased tax on rooms and meals. That revenue all is going to go towards economic development and roads, and I think with that revenue source, we'll be able to get to a point where our road investments are on a sustainable basis. But I understand statewide this is a real problem, and we have discussed that, and that's one area that the tax source that I think the legislature should consider.
Good luck.
I understand the challenges of that politically, certainly.
If I could get just an update, we've got about a minute and a half here. Steam energy project. You have a steam energy project that you're sort of working with the state.
Yeah, it was very successful project. We worked with the state and state rebuilt its heat plant, which has been used to heat the state office buildings for 50 years. With wood, that the plant capacity has doubled now, and we have built a distribution system that now heats most of our downtown buildings with renewable resources, wood from around the region, and it has worked spectacularly well. My building, where I work, is heated with wood, and you wouldn't know the difference. So it's been very effective, very reliable, and a successful project.
So there's a centralized heat facility, and then it's steamed throughout the
city. That's right. It's a large facility. It's located right behind the Department of Motor Vehicles, so anyone who's coming into Montpelier can look behind there. You can look in the plant. It's a very sophisticated structure, And we built a distribution system with pipes. It was quite disruptive, but at the end of the day, it works. We've got the lines in place, and it's effectively heating our downtown with renewable resources.
John Holler, Mayor of Montpelier, thank you very much for joining Open Mic.
Thank you, Mike. It's been a pleasure being on your show.
Coming up, Talk Media News, and then our own Lee Cattell will be in studio with us. We'll talk to Lee about, it's sort of like This Is Your Life with Lee, and I think you will enjoy it. Of course, you can listen to this show and any show at your convenience by going on to our WDEV radio website. And I got Tom here sending me snarky notes as I'm speaking. But you can listen to this podcast and any other Open Mic show by going on to our podcast, by going to WDEVradio.com and clicking on the Open Mic podcast. And like I said, coming up, we'll talk about national issues and then with Lee Cattell. This is Open Mic, and you are listening to locally owned and operated WDEV Radio News on the Friendly Pioneer, celebrating its 85th year anniversary this year. And that's a lot what we're going to be talking with Lee about. WDEV AM 550, broadcasting from Waterbury and Montpelier, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, and serving the kingdom at 101.9 FM from Island Pond. And of course, as I said, we're streaming worldwide, and I know there are people in Europe that listen to us at WDEVradio.com. I'm Mike Smith. Be back in a moment. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. It's my pleasure to on the line today to have Bob Ney from Talk Media News. Bob, good morning.
Good morning.
Bob, terrorism. Let's turn to terrorism. Newt Gingrich said we should test all Muslims in the United States, and if they believe in Sharia law, then we should deport them, because the two, Western civilization and Sharia law, they're incompatible. What do you think what's he doing here?
He's campaigning for vice president of the United States, is what he's doing.
Isn't it too late?
Well, yes, because 3 days ago I predicted Pence, and I was right. And it was Pence, and I'm not a genius. I had some inside information, okay? I'm not going to lie to you. It was Pence. I'm not 100% sure it's Pence today. And the national media is saying, well, if Pence, he has till noon to file whether he's governor, running for governor or not. That's irrelevant. Pence can go ahead today and say he's withdrawing as governor. And then Trump can say, I'm not picking Pence, and offer him a cabinet position, ambassadorship. Look, Pence was in trouble anyway in this election. So I don't rate that as high as the national gurus do. Now, I think it's Pence, but what's happened is, all of a sudden, because of this weird situation of having to file for governor or not again, and the terror incident, Trump, I'm guaranteeing you, is sitting there going, I might need somebody stronger. I might need that General Flynn. And all of a sudden, Newt goes on TV and talks about DNA testing every Muslim in America, Sharia law, monitoring mosques, surveilling them, surveillance. He talks about it. I think he's campaigning for VP. And then, I honestly, Mike, I thought I sat on my remote accidentally last night because I went up to get cereal, came back, and I thought I had accidentally turned on MSNBC with Hillary live. She was on O'Reilly.
Really?
Live.
I didn't know that.
He has goaded her for 7 years. Geraldo came on last night on the show, just laid into Obama like Trump couldn't, laid into Obama, Geraldo Rivera. Trump calls in, O'Reilly thanks him. Next thing you know, 15 minutes later, we have Hillary Clinton live. And she says the word war. What does that tell you? As soon as that convention's over in Philadelphia, she's going to break her ankle going to the right on that stage. They're going to have to call 911.
She won't have Bernie to contend with anymore. That's it.
And for the president, because she just went so contrary to President Obama last night. But Newt went overboard. You can't DNA test people. Now, Sharia law, that's a little different world. If somebody's officially trying to have a Sharia state here or something, or a city, that is contrary to American rule of law. But DNA tests?
But
really?
Here, if you're campaigning for VP. Why would you try to out-Trump Trump in terms of what you're talking about with terrorism? Doesn't that hurt your cause rather than help your cause?
Well, the base. Now, I'm going to speak as a former Republican member of Congress, all right, who was a moderate squish. I'm not going to tell you I was to the Tea Party right. But what's the base do? Wow, Newt is tough. Go get him. Hillary wants to increase 550% of refugees coming in. Newt wants to stop the Sharia law. They're going to run trucks across us next here. You know, this is fear is an amazing factor in America. You know, the Patriot Act was created out of fear. And so I think Newt played directly to the base and directly to Trump. I mean, if you're Donald Trump, you're going to be sitting there going, you know. I don't see Pence saying anything, so I don't know. I think Newt's making a last Hail Mary pitch there.
We've been talking a lot about the VP selection for on the Republican side. What about it's been a little bit quiet on the Democratic side? Who we thinking is a front runner there?
Well, I picked Castro, not Fidel, Julian Castro, former mayor of San Antonio. Many may not know him. Latino. Articulate guy, very presentable, former mayor, former head of HUD. But the Clinton campaign likes Kane, you know, from Virginia, right?
Right.
Now, here's the thing, though. This terror attack might have changed that dynamic, too, because the progressive movement does not like Kane, does not want Kane. He's too conservative. Now, if Hillary goes to the right of the president on this whole terror thing, can she really have Kane there, you know? I don't think so. I think she'd have to maybe go with Julian Castro.
One of the things that you normally do coming out of a convention is expect the convention bounce. And you do that because you unite the party. You have everybody talking how great the nominee is. Is Donald Trump going to get a convention bounce?
No. No. No, he's not. Now, he's going to get a tiny bounce in the sense that he's going to come out the nominee.
Mm-hmm.
Look, the Ohio delegation is going to vote for John Kasich, all of them. Donald Trump is going to be the nominee eventually. You got the lady from Utah or Oklahoma, where's she from? Maybe Colorado, Unruh. She wants to replace Donald Trump. If she is successful on Monday, they will have to rent a farm in upstate New York to have the rest of the convention because it's going to go on for 3 weeks. You can't undo Donald Trump on Monday. Every Republican in America will lose their election, basically, if they implode the Republican Party at the convention. He's going to be the nominee. But the only bump he's going to get is people are going to say, can you believe he survived that in Cleveland?
The one thing that I've been fascinated with, Bob, is over the past few weeks, how close they are in the polls. And certainly I think what's being shown is this email controversy is biting.
Well, I said this a year ago when my friends laughed at me. I said, you know, Jeb Bush will be out of the race. Oh, Bob, please. Donald Trump will be out of the race in 3 weeks. I said, no, he won't. Bernie Sanders will remain in to the end. You know, all these things. Now, the reason I saw, if you talk across America, you see all these things going on. The talking heads are isolated in New York and D.C. And I still have friends that are like, it's going to be a bloodbath. Donald Trump's going to lose so bad. Listen, he's taken on the Pope. Who hasn't he? What mistakes has he not made politically? Honestly,
POWs.
Anybody else would have been doomed. She's so bad as a candidate, they're close.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting. Just briefly, turning back to Dallas, out of all the people that have been talking about Dallas, two in particular struck me as level-headed, decent, well-respected people, and that was Tim Scott, the African-American U.S. Senator from South Carolina, Republican, by the way, and Dallas Police Chief David Brown. They should be running for president.
I would vote for that ticket. The chief of police is magnificent. And also the mayor. But the chief of police is just those two were the most amazing. No politics, healing. Two amazing people, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know Tim Scott at all, but he certainly, in plain English, told us there's a different view between black and white, and we need to figure out a way to bring us together. Which,
right.
Which was a, he was very articulate, and
yes, he was,
and came from his heart. Bob, thank you as always.
Thank you.
I really appreciate your time. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Bob Ney from Talk Media News. When we come back, Lee Cattell. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. It's my pleasure to have in studio, although I don't know how pleasurable he feels it is, but we have Lee Cattell, WDEV's own Lee Cattell. And what this is we've been going through and talking about people who are behind the scenes or on the microphone, as Lee is, talking about what they do at WDEV in celebration of our 85th year anniversary. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Mike. You know, I really thought this was what happened when you found out how hard it is to book guests in the middle of the summer on a Friday morning. But okay, I'm happy to be here.
We actually bounced a guest to get you in.
Get out.
No, we did.
Wow. That is a stunning development. I guess I'm flattered or honored.
Well, I looked at the time schedule and said, oh my God, how many people do I have to get in the next few months? And there's a lot.
There's plenty of time for it all. I'm sure we'll all find our slot here somehow.
If you wish to join our conversation because you want to know more about Lee, give us a call at 802-244-1777.
I thought the topic of this conversation was about the history of WDEV.
Well, we'll get to that as well. Or toll free at 877-291-8255. So before we get to the history of DEV and your involvement here, people hear you every day, and they hear you throughout Vermont and New Hampshire and New York, but they know little about you. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? How did you get here?
All right. In a nutshell, born in Burlington in 1971. That puts me at 44.
Mm-hmm.
Grew up in Cambridge and Jeffersonville in the middle of Lamoille County. Graduated from Lamoille Union High School. Went to Syracuse University. Majored in broadcasting with a concentration in political science. I'm about a fraction from actually getting that degree. I need about 7 credits. I got everything, and I was like, oh, I'm close enough. I'll pick them up somewhere, and that was 20 years ago. I came back to Vermont, started at the country music station, WLVB in Morrisville. I played country music songs over there for about 2.5 years on Saturdays and Sundays. And then an opportunity opened here for the night shift at WDEV, and Jack Donovan hired me. My first thought was, Jack, you're going to pay me to listen to the Red Sox play at night. That is so cool. And he's like, there's more to it than that. I said, yeah, I know, but you're going to pay me to listen to the Red Sox here at night. And that's where it started. I was working the evenings for about 12 years, and then Jack retired, and he asked me to move into the daytime, and that's where I've been ever since.
Was radio always on your mind in terms of, because you went to Syracuse, and obviously it's known for its broadcasting school, was broadcasting always your ambition?
I think so. The dream going back since I was 13 was to be the radio play-by-play guy for the Boston Red Sox. And I'll tell you right now, when Joe Castiglione actually does hang up his microphone, they're going to get a resume and a tape from me. But that is about the only job that I would ever consider that would get me to leave this place.
And why?
Just, wow, that's a dream job. I mean, who wouldn't want to do that?
No, I'm talking about, you know, why is it so important that that would be the only job? Because that's a huge job. Why not other jobs? Why would you stay here?
Well, I don't. Moving out of Vermont, kind of, I don't know if I would like to leave Vermont. I like Vermont, and if you want to be in Vermont, there's only one place where you can do live radio, and this is it. I mean, with all due respect to all those 45 or 50 people that work at VPR, hardly none of it is live, and none of it is spontaneous. And on this show, and I envy you, Mike, because you can line up all these guests, and you give all of our listeners the access. All they got to do is pick up a phone and dial the digits, and they can be talking to the Secretary of Education or, you know, maybe not the governor, but maybe the next governor will join you on your show, I hope. But that's a neat power that you give the people, and That doesn't happen. I mean, yeah, there's a couple other stations around in Randolph and a few places that'll have a local call-in show, but DEV's a big spot. We broadcast the world round. We get callers from the Carolinas and Indiana and all over, and it's just a neat place to be.
Have you ever worked outside of Vermont?
Yeah, I did. I after 2 years of university, I burned out a little bit, and my brother moved out to Arizona. I said, I'm coming along. So for 9 months, I lived out in Tempe, Arizona. I took a couple of classes at Arizona State, and I worked in the airport at the Sky Harbor International, the Southwest Terminal. I was working at a Nathan's hot dog stand for about 9 months out there. It was the worst job I ever had, although I did get to serve Ricky Henderson and Reggie Jackson a pizza. That was like the highlight of the whole time I was down there. Ricky comes up to the desk, and I keep staring at him because I recognized him, but, you know, it could have been somebody who looked like him. Yeah. Finally, after I got done staring at him, I slid the pizza across the counter. I said, you know, you look a lot like Ricky Henderson. He says, man, I get that all the time. And then he turned around and bought two pieces. He turned and handed the other one to Reggie Jackson, and I was like jumping up and down behind the counter. He's like, I can't believe that just happened. And that was the highlight of 9 months at the Sky Harbor Airport. And I saw ZZ Top walk by, and that was about it. I was there when the Rodney King riots went off in L.A. So
back in 92.
Yeah, that jammed up that airport pretty big.
Who were your idols growing up?
Jim Rice, the left fielder for the Boston Red Sox, I guess was the first guy. Really, I had a poster of him on my wall, and big Red Sox fan back in the day. Hmm. I liked my folks. I mean, my grandparents, and they were a couple of tremendous families here in Vermont. A lot of family people that I looked up to. And I guess we can kind of keep it to that.
Okay. Any changes now? When you were growing up, there were idols. Same idols?
Well, you know, I mean, the baseball players kind of move along to somebody a little bit more modern. No, I don't know about idols anymore. I guess you just kind of learned what you have and move on, and my folks have all passed, so it's kind of just me, and I don't know. I look around for inspiration wherever I can find it.
We're speaking with Lee Cattell, who obviously is Mr. Everything here at the station, but he definitely, you know him mostly from the news and sports play-by-play. If you wish to join our conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. And the reason we're talking to Lee is because on occasion, I have various people on who work at the station, who are here, who have made WDEV successful. And this is our 85th year anniversary this year. And I've had people who have retired and still work at the station. Although it's sort of like the Hotel California. Once you come in, you never leave.
You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. Beardsley's still here. Jack Donovan's still here. Everybody that retires comes back around, and, you know, it's nice to keep that. It's good for our institutional memory, and, you know, you don't have to train a guy like Jack a thing because he knows how to do it all already.
One of the things I'd be interested in, you've done just about everything here. What have you learned in these positions over the years?
I've learned so much. I mean, with Ken Squire in this building, basically you sit at the feet of the master every day. And, you know, it's not every day, but from time to time, a word about how you're delivering your news stories, or to turn a phrase to make it more effective, or how to promote and to get people involved and to reach people and grab them and draw them closer to that radio. Those are the kind of lessons that, you know, I went to college forever. I mean forever. And through all of that, all the classes and all the lab and all the professor talking about you, I picked up more in about 6 months working at this radio station than I did in the 5 years that I was grinding my way through Syracuse. And this place, with all the people that know, and it's not just Ken. I mean, Eric is just tremendous with all that he knows how to do. And they all impart information. And since I have so many roles here at the station, I have to listen to everybody because I might be doing their job in a week or so, for a day or so. So I just do truly love this place, and the people here are awesome. It's a great family, despite, you know, and like a family, we, you know, get at it once in a while, but eventually we go forward together.
How many takes does it take you to do those Thunder Road commercials?
Probably about 12.
How do you get so high energy? Do you think of something when you do that?
A lot of time when I'm reading those commercials, I imagine that the race is going on right in front of me, and I'm describing the action.
That's great. We're speaking with Lee Cattell, obviously. He is a Mr. Everything here at WDEV, but mostly news, play-by-play sports. And as we just discussed, if you're listening to Thunder Road commercials, you're listening to Lee Cattell.
Mike, I owe you a lunch, by the way. Not that we ever put out a formal bet on this, but the long-running argument out in the hallway was whether or not Bernie Sanders was going to win the Democratic nomination. And for weeks, I was insisting that Bernie was going to win it. And that, you know, when Bernie started, everybody was kind of casting him off. I said, don't underestimate this guy. And when he won New Hampshire, I thought eventually Hillary's support would start to erode. But it did, certainly, quite extensively, far more than she ever thought and more than a lot of people considered. But it didn't erode enough for her to drop the nomination. And you were right, you had that all along. My credit to you. You said, no, never going to happen. I said, you wait. Well, I've waited. The results are in. And, Mike, I tip my cap to you. You had it.
I'll be waiting on that lunch. We're speaking with Lee Cattell, and we'll be back with Lee in just a moment. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're speaking with Lee Cattell, Mr. Everything here, but you know him mostly doing the news at noontime and at 4 o'clock, isn't it?
Yeah, 4 to 5:30 afternoon news service.
And also,
let me call a race once in a while if things work out right.
And play-by-play sometimes.
Yeah, right? Every once in a while. That's fun.
That's a big deal, isn't it? When you do a play-by-play at a high school game, that's a big deal for the high school students, isn't it?
It's a lot of fun. Plus, parents listening in, you know, there's something special about hearing your child's name broadcast over the interwaves. And it's just fun. It's always in the moment, which is part of, you know, WDEV's appeal, is we try to stay in the moment live almost all day long. A few recorded programs here and there, but when something happens, we try to stay right at it.
And is that what makes WDEV unique? Just you had mentioned the fact that this is the only radio station that sort of is on top of everything all the time.
Well, I mean, look at, there's been a couple instances where we've gone overnight. As you know, usually at midnight we power down, but Tropical Storm Irene, and of course, May of 2011, there was another big storm, and Roger Hill and I hunkered down here in the studio until about 3 o'clock in the morning that day, telling people where and when the roads were closing and playing songs like Raindrops Keep Falling on Your Head. We were trying to find the right rain songs to play, like When the Levee Breaks. No, don't play that one. Don't play that one.
It's like watching a movie on an aircraft with an aircraft crashing.
Or the Valentine's Day snowstorm. We got 3 weeks, 3 feet of snow, and Eric and Roger were here overnight. And in the morning, I spent an hour digging my car out and went home. But, you know, those big moments, you can count on WDEV if something big is happening, that we're going to do the best we can to provide as much information as we can.
Going back to Syracuse, why did you pick Syracuse?
Because they had a broadcasting school. I applied to UVM, but there wasn't a communications program.
They had ended that, yeah.
And they had a radio station, but Syracuse was tricked out with all this fancy stuff. Although I will say, you know, the whole college thing was a little frustrating because I really wanted to get right into it. And the moment you go to the university there, they give you like one class that's involved in what you really want to learn about, and then you got to fill it out with all this other stuff. So it wasn't very concentrated. They got to milk that other $30,000 out of you before you get the $5,000 that you really wanted to pay for. But after a while, and the other thing was, massive, I mean, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people trying to fill in for just a couple of slots here and there. So it was very competitive and very hard to find the time. And A lot of times you had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to get down there and slog it out for a two-minute bit, and then it was kind of hard to see the big payoff at the time. Especially considering the habits I had, it was a lot easier to sleep in. It took me a couple of years to get rid of all the bad habits I fine-tuned in college.
We're speaking with WDEV's own Lee Cattell, and we're talking about WDEV and why it's interesting and important to work here. This is the 85th year anniversary of WDEV, and we're speaking with various people at various times that make WDEV successful. One of them is Lee Cattell. If you want to join our conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255.
Mike, I got a question for the audience. All right, something that popped into my head on the way to work today. All right, coming down Route 100, and right there in the middle of Hyde Park, there's this big roundabout that's under construction, or reconstruction. They built it, and then they decided they need to make it bigger or modify it at some point. But as I was approaching it today, I noticed that this, what is supposed to be a functional utilitarian traffic thing, is festooned in the middle with all of these plants and trees and shrubs growing up. So it's part like, it does that bother anybody else out there? I mean, we've got this thing, and the circles, all of a sudden there's flowers and everything growing out of it. Like, is that a necessary expense? Couldn't they just cover that with a little bit of dirt or some gravel, and then it would be that way the whole time? But instead, every year they got to get up there and throw some dirt in and flowers and some things like that.
Well, let's go to Lorraine in Montpelier and ask her.
She's probably the head of the flower committee for the Montpelier Traffic Circle. Let's go.
Hi, Lorraine. Mike.
Hi there. No, but I'd like to be. But I can see your point about just gravel. Anyway, I just wanted to make a quick call because I happen to be Lee's second cousin. And I wanted to tell you a little known fact. At least I'm a good deal older than he is. I was probably a teenager when he was 3 years old. But he could read at three. And I don't know if he tells people that, but he could. I remember visiting him, and it wasn't just books that his mother had read to him. He could read the cereal box or the newspaper. I watched him do it. So he could.
Holy mackerel. Lorraine, thank you so much for that little
thing. You're welcome, and good luck, Lee.
Thank you, Lorraine.
Are you a reading prodigy here?
I was, once upon a time, I was a child prodigy of sorts. I mean, I took a lot of tests because they were like, oh, this kid's pretty sharp. It's all, you know, the IQ test. I took the SAT when I was in fifth grade and scored 900, which was, you know, about average for all the high school kids that were taking it at the time. And my SAT scores were basically what got me into college in the first place.
You have, you're like related to everyone around here.
Well, now, my dad, the Cattells, go back about seven or eight generations to Johnson and then Richford. And they're all over Fairfield and Bakersfield and Franklin County. There's Cattells everywhere. And the LaHouillier side, my mom was a LaHouillier, one of 14 children. My grandfather, Antonio, came down from Quebec with his wife and their kids. And then he had some more while they were down here. And there's loads of LaHouilliers all over the place as well. And I've got a lot of relatives here in this area.
And hopefully a lot of stories. If you know Lee Cattell, give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Bob in Montpelier. Bob, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Yes, good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
The first time that, first of all, I have been listening to WDEV since 1972 when I was fortunate enough to marry a Vermonter and come into this fine state. I'm still waiting for my citizenship papers. No, I've been told they're in the mail.
Forget it.
Okay. I met Lee for the first time when he was doing a live remote down at Vermont Tire and Service on the Barrymont Pier Road. And I've always had a propensity for stopping in and wanting to meet the personalities on WDEV, and I thought Lee was, I don't know what I thought, whether he was changing tires or whatever, but he told me he was a new guy. And I have to tell you, DEV has been remarkably fortunate in hiring the people they have over the years. It's been a real pleasure. I love listening to all the personalities on DEV, and Lee and Artie do such a great job with Ken. So I listen early in the morning, and I love to listen to the 4 o'clock the news service. So thanks very much, Lee, for everything you're doing. You're certainly a great addition to the station, and I'm just a big proponent of you and the staff at DEV.
Boy, I love to be loved. That is just awesome. Bob, thank you very much.
Let me just ask, he brought up the Ken and the Artie sort of interchange, and I talked to Jack Donovan a little bit about this with the dump show. That's not prearranged. You just, it's all off the cuff, right?
I'm completely off the cuff. Sometimes, I mean, Ken will come up here and grab a stack of papers and go, what's in the sports today? And so, it's a lot of spontaneous, or sometimes, you know, is Ken coming up? No, he had a meeting this afternoon. So, grabbing a stack of sports and running off and, you know, making the best of what's going on. It's day to day. It's so much fun to come in here.
Let's go to Pat in Underhill. Pat, you're on open mic with Lee Cattell.
Good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Lee, I believe your family lived in Underhill when you were born?
Yes, that's right.
Next door to us.
That's right, that farmhouse that...
No.
Well, we lived up on the hill above the cemetery there.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
Yes. And I when I first heard you on the air, I said, I wonder if that's the Lee Cattell, that little boy that lived next door to us. And when you were just talking about your family and your mom was a Lahulier, I said, oh, yeah, that's the one.
That's me, all right.
Yes.
Yeah, they were all those Lahuliers were congregated around Underhill upon a time.
Yes.
Quite a family, and all in the church and everything around there.
Yes.
It was, those were very fun times in Underhill, and some of the stories of the trouble that my uncles got into. I had to bring my Uncle Morris in here one time for an interview, Mike. Then the calls will start coming in.
Yes. Anyway, so I'm glad to know it's you, and I really enjoy listening to you. We love WDEV, and I'm so happy to be able to get it where we are.
Thanks, Pat.
I don't know remember any stories about you as a little boy, but I sure heard some about your brother.
Oh, you know, he was always the better behaved of us. I'm surprised you've got tales of his mischief.
I think you were too little. When you moved away, I think you were too little to get in much trouble. But I remember Troy and your dog.
Oh, well.
Bozo,
yes, Bozo. Oh, my God. These people, this is going to be a walk down memory lane today.
I told you it was about your life today.
Your mother had lost them, and apparently they were down in the cemetery, and she says, I think they followed each other just down to the cemetery. And, of course, it was a little hard to see down there from the house, but she found them eventually, and I don't think Troy was more than 5 years old, maybe. So that's the one I remember the most.
Yeah. I think the one time I almost got in trouble when I was three was Paul Jones, our neighbor, had an indoor swimming pool with a big slide, and I was 3 years old, and I went right up to the top of the slide without the floating protective things, and that freaked the family out. We didn't want anybody happening there.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you for your phone call.
Thanks, Pat.
Let's go to Larry and Barry. Larry, you're on open mic with Lee Cattell.
Hey. I enjoy listening to Lee very much. I just want you to know I'm going to be 85 tomorrow myself. Oh. WDV and I grew up together.
How about that? That is so cool. July 16th, 1931.
That's when I was born, July 16th, 1931.
Well, I hope you're celebrating with us, Larry.
Yeah, I am. And it's a pleasure to have somebody like Lee representing WDEV. And I particularly enjoy the music when he on the music and explains everything about it. It's really a pleasure to listen to that.
I do a little bit of that, Larry. Joel Nashman's the guy who just blows everybody away with all that knowledge.
I agree, you too. You do a good job, too.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Larry. And happy birthday, by the way.
Yes, that is very cool. came in with WDEV in 1931.
Let's go to Gary in Springfield. Gary, you're on open mic.
Hey, happy birthday, WDEV. And I'm about 3 years behind DEV coming into the world. But you're talking to one of the two southernmost listeners of DEV, the other one being a Waterbury resident till he moved down here and lives over the hill from me, and he has his radio on the kitchen sink where you get good pickup.
That's great.
But I enjoy seeing Lee at the farm show. I'm the chestnut nut, has the chestnut exhibit up there, Lee, if you remember.
Sure.
And so I hope to see you there again next January.
I always go to the farm show. That's our favorite event because we see more people at the farm show. I mean, there's a lot of events where you go out to and we see a few people. But the farm show, you see hundreds and hundreds of people, and we're right there where everybody can stop by. So we'll be looking forward to getting back there in January. I am not in a rush for January to arrive, but when it gets there, I certainly am looking forward to heading down to the fair.
Amen.
Thanks, Gary. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. In the studio with us is Lee Cattell. You know him as Mr. Everything here at WDEV, including nowadays doing the sport, doing the news at noontime and at 4 to 5:30. One of the things, Lee, that you talked about is the reason you love it here is that WDEV is live. It's on top of everything. And my question is, has there been a time when it didn't go as planned?
Well, I've championed a few disasters here at the station, that's for sure. Now, I don't know, probably about 8 or 9 years ago, I was campaigning for Ken to have my own sports show at night. And he let me fly with 1 hour, I think, in leading into a baseball game. And at the last moment, I tried to book Bill Lee on. And he answered on his cell phone. He's like, I'm in the Montreal airport, and I'm heading out for somebody. And I said, well, it's the last minute, so let's give it a shot. But he had to board his plane, lost the cell phone. So the moment the show starts, I'm like, all right, I'm getting ready to get Bill Lee, and the phone is gone, and he disappeared. And I was like, well, I really wanted to have him on, but he's flying somewhere, so I basically, you know, the classic train wreck, I championed that. I've also done some really dumb things. Even this past year, what was it? Though we had an event on Saturday with Vermont Business Group, John Booten's outfit, and due to some communication, I never showed up at a remote I was supposed to on Saturday. And that led to, the people weren't happy about that. And then there was the time when Ed Smith was supposed to be at Montpelier Agway, and somehow I got the information they sent me confused, and I screwed the whole thing up. So he showed up, and they're like, well, we thought you weren't coming here. Well, here I am. And that was all my fault, too. I've made some huge mistakes here. I hope people will forgive me for the dumb things that I do, but I try and get it right once in a while.
What do you do to relax?
Usually I just go home and put the radio on, oddly enough. I don't have a TV at my house, but I get a radio and a satellite radio, and I flip channel, trying to find something to entertain me at night. I mean, I go home in the summertime, and I usually cut down a tree, block it, split it, and stack it, and get ready for winter with the hour and a half of daylight I have when I get home.
Well, now, you ventured into politics earlier in your life. What did you learn?
Well, yeah, I ran for the House of Representatives in Lowell in 2010 because I looked at the ballot, there was only one person on the ballot, and I said, well, you know, we ought to have a choice. So I spent about $20 in gas and went around to Troy and Westfield and got all the signatures and got my name on the ballot, and that was about all the campaigning I did. And I got about 30% of the vote in there, which was, you know, okay. That was the same year that Richie Tarrant ran against Bernie Sanders for Senate. And I spent $20 on my campaign. Rich Tarrant spent $14 million on his campaign. And when they counted the votes at the end, we each had the same percentage.
I think you turned out better.
Well, I think dollar for dollar, I was about as effective as you could be.
How do you define success? I always ask people this because different people have different definitions of success. How do you define success?
I guess I would define success as a certain level of satisfaction in the job you've done.
Great.
I try not to think about dollars too much. You can't really be in the radio industry and think about having lots of money unless you've got a 600 station group to deal with. And even those guys don't make a lot of money. A couple of them do.
If you were giving advice to someone who wants to get into radio, wants to get into news, what would you say to them?
Do everything. Broaden your skills as far as you can, because the next opportunity that comes by, they might not be looking for a lot of things. They might be looking for one specific thing. So the more things that you can do, the greater you can stretch your skills out, you know, the more chance you have of getting an opportunity from somebody.
And if you wanted somebody, we've got about a minute here, but if there was one thing that you wanted people to know about WDEV, what would it be?
The one thing I would want people to know about WDEV right now is we're looking for a sports guy at night. Okay? So
this wasn't meant to be an advertisement.
Well, but I'm going to put it out there right now. If you're looking for an opportunity, you're at WDEV and you think you've got a little broadcasting skill, I want to hear what you've got to say. Send it to WDEVRadioVermont.com. Little tape if you've got one, or you know, an MP3, or a resume. And if you know a little bit about sports, I'll be listening.
Is that because you're going to get a job with the Red Sox?
No.
Lee, thank you.
Not immediately, but maybe down the road.
Lee, thank you so much.
Thanks, Mike.
I want to thank our guest today, Montpelier Mayor John Holler. And of course, you just heard him, our very own Lee Cattell. And of course, all of you, thank you for your phone calls today. This is Open Mic, and you are listening to locally owned and operated WDEV Radio News on the Friendly Pioneer, celebrating its 85th year anniversary this year. WDEV AM 550, broadcasting from Waterbury and Montpelier, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, and serving the kingdom at 101.9 FM from Island Pond. And, of course, we're streaming worldwide at WDEVradio.com. I'm Mike Smith. Thank you all for your phone calls. And have a great weekend. Sunday is supposed to be great. We'll talk again on Tuesday.
The Open Mic Podcast is brought to you by Hickok Boardman, Dennis Ricker, and Brown.
Find us online at hbinsurance.com. And you're always welcome to visit us on Facebook, in Vermont, online, on the phone. Hickok and Boardman Insurance Group. We are here when you need us.